Dido, as I said, hears a rumor that the ships are being fitted out, thinks this means that Aeneas is going to sneak away without even saying goodbye to her, and she forces a confrontation to him. And she says, "Deceiver, did you even hope to hide so harsh a crime, to leave this land of mine without a word? Can nothing hold you back? Neither your love, the hand you pledged, nor even the cruel death that lies in wait for Dido?" Then a few lines later, she goes on, "Do you flee me? By tears, by your right hand, by wedding, by the marriage we began. If I did anything deserving of you, or anything of mine was sweet to you, take pity on a fallen house, put off your plan, I pray." She continues on for a few lines more, and she ends up by saying, very, very moving speech, she ends by saying that if only she had conceived a son before Aeneas left, that if only, as she puts it, there were a little Aeneas playing in her halls, she would find it easier to reconcile herself to Aeneas's departure. So she makes an extremely strong emotional plea to him, calling on what she considers their marriage, or at least a marriage that they began. Aeneas, warned by Jupiter, Virgil says, shows no emotion whatsoever in answering her. He says, "I never shall deny what you deserve, the kindnesses that you could tell. I never shall regret remembering Elissa," that's another name for Dido, "for as long as I remember my own self. I'll speak brief words that fit the case. I never hoped to hide, do not imagine that, my flight. I am not furtive. I have never held the wedding torches as a husband. I have never entered into such agreements. If fate had granted me to guide my life by my own auspices and to unravel my troubles with unhampered will, then I should cherish first the town of Troy." And he goes on to tell her that Jupiter sent Mercury to remind him that he's fated to go to Italy, that he must leave her. And he ends up by saying, "No longer set yourself and me afire. Stop your quarrel. It is not my own free will that leads to Italy. Italiam non sponte sequor," in Latin. I follow Italy, not of my own free will. Now, how should we interpret these two characters in this extremely emotionally charged scene? Is Dido entirely innocent? Is she completely in the right and being wronged by a cruel and callous Aeneas? She had made a vow never to remarry. If she really thinks she's married, she's broken that vow. If she doesn't really think she's married, then she's living in open fornication, which is strongly against the mores of her society. She allows herself to be persuaded by her sister Anna, and it can be argued that Dido's first loss of integrity is when she decides to cover her own personal passion under the veil of political need, to say that I need to have a husband, I need to have a king of Carthage. That can be identified as the point at which she loses her integrity. And once again, Virgil tells us quite clearly that despite what Dido says about a marriage they began, they aren't married. Because, as Virgil says, she tries to hide her culpa, her guilt, by calling it marriage. Another point that I think is worth remembering here is that while we, as a culture, are perhaps very strongly disposed to respond to the emotion of Dido's plea, to see her as a wronged and deserted and mistreated lover, in Virgil's time, for Virgil's audience, her story would have raised strong and rather troubling memories of Cleopatra, another African queen, another queen on the African continent, who had a liaison with a Roman leader that distracted him from his Roman business, that threatened the very existence of Rome. Dido and Aeneas would inevitably raise in the minds of Virgil's audience very uncomfortable memories of Cleopatra and Mark Antony, for that matter, of Cleopatra and Julius Caesar before Mark Antony. And so this plea, this emotional plea of an African queen that a Roman leader stay with her, would not resonate necessarily in a favorable way in the minds of Virgil's audience.